Welcome everyone to Then Now Whatever, the Wrestling Podcast, episode 51, back again with the Tape Trader Diaries. I'm your host, Dunk Around and Find Out, Duncan Joyce, joined as ever by the hardest working Triple H mark in show business, it's Mr. Kyle Cambry.
Hello, welcome to the show.
I thought I'd modernise a little bit, Braun's mood for the time, so I guess I should as well.
Yeah, I liked it.
How you doing, Kyle?
I'm all good. It's half term at the moment, so it's a week of trying to reset the batteries, ready for the final few weeks of GCSEs and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I'm feeling quite refreshed. How are you doing?
Oh, lovely. I've had a bit of a getaway as well recently. Went for a long weekend to Dublin for Kathy's birthday and even got to see Bruce Springsteen while we were there. Brilliant.
Fantastic. I was just saying that was one of the places that I've still never been to, but, you know, really want to go.
Oh, I definitely recommend it. Like, the Temple Bar drag is the really big touristy bit, and even when that's pretty crowded, it's still fairly manageable. You can still find a pretty authentic pub around there and have a good time.
The pictures look really, really good.
I would have had more, but it appears that my camera completely messed up my SD card.
Ooh, okay.
So every time I try and delete stuff from it, it just reappears magically. And every photo that I've tried to take since then, it doesn't display when I look at it through my camera. So I've possibly got another, like, 50 or so photos on there, but I'll have to see.
Yeah.
But once again, Kyle, we're going back in time in this post-invasion WWF era. This time we're examining the November 29th, 2001 episode of WWF SmackDown. It's another one you recorded. I can't remember if you just had it to hand anyway or if I asked for it.
I sort of remember at this time I was really fully invested in what was going on. And yeah, I think, you know, the past few weeks and the next few weeks, I think I made a habit of sort of not missing one, really.
I can't imagine having that habit anymore. I can't keep up.
It is crazy at the moment. It's sort of one every day.
I know. I've got tickets booked for All In at Wembley, and I still can't bring myself to get through this Dynamite backlog.
Ooh. Well done for getting the tickets.
It was much easier than I expected, and I kind of wish I'd held off a little bit because the checkout experience was a little bit confusing. I wanted to get the top tier at the back that faced the entrance, and they put me a little bit to the right, and the way they were showing the pricing, it confused me because it didn't match anything on their pricing scheme. So I'm a little bit worried that I'm going to have some kind of pillar or something in the way. And I don't mean MJF or Guevara or Darby or anybody.
I mean, you could even get the worst pillar of them all, and that being a really fucking tall guy. They are the worst. Just when you think you've got a really good spot, there's always a tall guy.
I know, whenever we go for music gigs now, we always try and get seats just to avoid that stress, because Kathy's so short. So, like, we're going to see The National in September. I'm just like, right, sod it, seats, right at the front of the seats that we can get.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot, I forgot to look up where this show is taking place.
Ooh, I think I might have that on my notes. Wichita, Kansas.
Ah, beautiful. I'm a lineman for the county. Yes, from the Kansas Coliseum. Jerry Lawler and Michael Cole on commentary as before. We start off with a clip from earlier today of Vince and Flair in the locker room. Vince seemingly too pissed off for words until Flair coaxes the issue out of him. Vince suspects Nature's in cahoots with Stone Cold. And Vince wanted Austin to join the Kiss My Ass Club, but instead, Austin took off his belt and beat my unblemished butt! He also doesn't like Flair booking my good friend William Regal in a strap match with Austin tonight behind Vince's back. Flair counters he doesn't like Vince wanting the entire world to kiss his ass. So to counter, Vince promises a third member will be joining the Kiss My Ass Club tonight. And you're never going to figure out who's going in the night, pal. And you got to admit, he has a nice ass. Appropriately enough, at that point, fans start chanting asshole. And then that leads us to Flair reaching the conclusion, you are an ass.
The whole beginning segment made me laugh with the fact that Vince was like, I suspect you knew in advance that Austin wasn't going to kiss my ass. Hold on, Vince. He was never kissing your ass. Everyone knew that.
Even in his heel run, he only ever demeaned himself in fear of his opponents.
Yeah.
Like, he would always try and express a very different kind of admiration for Vince.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not looking good. Already 1 week after, if you have my back, I'll have yours, pal. They're bickering away. After the opening titles, we don't get any pyro and cut straight to Stone Cold Steve Austin coming out, once again wearing his nice comfy long sleeve. Oh, and a bit of a different look for the show tonight. There's no rampway. I didn't realise they started doing this trick this early.
Yeah, that was a strange look.
Yeah, I feel like it does miss a little bit of something when it's just like the carpet pile. Fans are much more into Austin than they seemed to be last week. And he recounts his meal at Cracker Barrel. Catfish? What? Green beans? What? Mashed potatoes?
What?
The waitress was on the same page as you, Kyle. She didn't think Austin would kiss Vince's ass at all. Austin agrees that it's something he would never do, and then he calls Regal pathetic for going through with it. His thoughts then turn to vengeance, and I agree, what? I agree, what? With The Rock! It should have just been those two lads fighting it out without Kurt Angle and Chris Jericho involved. Because they're the two biggest names in the history of the WWF.
Mm-hmm. He's only saying that because there's another guy that's injured, but we'll just dance over that.
Now, come on.
No, I know.
Even you've got to admit, Triple H's legacy is still kind of in progress compared to those other two lads.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's been a really cool bit where Austin brings up Ric Flair's to be the man, you gotta beat the man catchphrase. And so the fans woo, and Austin whats at them to make them repeat the woo. Brilliant stuff. He'll beat Kurt Angle's little ass, watch Rock's match, and hope that The Rock wins, because it will be bigger than WrestleMania if he does. But before he can get to the bottom line, he's interrupted by Kurt Angle. Earth to Stone Cold! Come in, Earth! Kurt says he'll make Austin tap faster than Greg Hines on speed. I have no clue who that is.
No.
But Austin just calls Kurt a red, white and blue jackass, which is only second to my favourite insult that he ever threw at Kurt Angle, which he did at One Night Stand 2005, where he called him a gold medal son of a bitch. Kurt tries to get the fans to hell yeah his proclamation that he'll be Austin at Vengeance, but they keep yelling, hell no! What? Hell no! Shut up! Instead, fans yell hell yeah to Austin's suggestion that Kurt gets out of here, which finally lets him get to the bottom line. Nice, funny promo exchange there, I thought.
Yeah, really good. It sort of shows how high they are on the fans' radar of both face and heel to get the crowd really in the palm of their hands, you know, from both sides. Angle prods the fans, they react. Austin prods the fans, they react. It was really nice.
It's further evidence of Austin finding his feet as a face again while working in some of the little things that he picked up as a heel, and it's working out and bringing the crowd back on side for him. To Michael Cole's surprise, Test arrives. And Cole's like, "You're not scheduled to be here. Have you forgotten, Michael? You can't fire me. I got immunity." He's out here to join commentary for the opening match, which is for the WWF European Championship. Christian, the champion, is defending against Scotty Too Hotty, accompanied by the hip-hop hippo, Albert. Or, as Test put it, "Hey, hey, hey, it's Scotty and Fat Albert."
Oh, lovely.
We're also told that X-Pac will be the guest host of Sunday Night Heat this week, and we see in the graphic he's still got the light heavyweight championship. We see clips of Test in an intercontinental title match with Edge on Raw, where he got DQ'd for pulling the referee in the way of a spear, because, you know, he's not going to get fired or anything, because you can't fire me. Scotty and Albert made the save, which allowed Edge to spear Test. And Test declared, "I was about to become Intercontinental Champion for a second time," which causes Cole to counter, "So does immunity mean you're immune to telling the truth as well?"
Whew. Wow.
Yeah, he grew some minerals tonight, did Michael Cole. He then calls Christian a brown noser and suspects that he might become the new Kiss My Ass Club member. Where did this come from? Scotty was very happy about shoulder blocking Christian down and maintaining control using his speed. The Bulldog gets dodged, only for Christian to get his reverse DDT for a two count. We're barely 5 seconds into Christian taking control of this match, and there's already big Scotty chance. Pretty good crowd tonight.
Yeah.
A fucking rolling liger kick by Scotty. Did not expect that. Gets a near fall, and commentary start mentioning Albert's head being 8 3/8. I never understood what the hell that was about.
No.
Like, what kind of measurement is it? Like, I get trying to make out that he's got a big head, but, like, it can't be 8 3/8 inches, because that would be tiny. Albert pulled Christian's feet off the ropes on a dirty roll-up, which sees Test send him into the ring post. And in retaliation, Scotty sends Test into the ring post, shit-cans Christian out of the ring, bulldogs Test, and you can see Test's watch came undone when he got hit with that move. That sets him up for a worm attempt, but Christian immediately gets back inside to hit the unprettier from behind for the free count to retain his championship after 2 minutes and 50 seconds. He then whipped Scotty into a Test big boot after the bell as an exclamation point. Kyle, what are your thoughts on this one?
Not the greatest, if I'm honest. It was sort of way overbooked for what it actually was. You can sort of see how Test and Christian could maybe work as a heel team. The crowd were way over for Scotty, and you'd think that he was sort of the champion in this match. Yeah, just the match happened.
I was much more keen on this than you. That's breezy, even though it was brief, and Scotty had some nice surprises up his sleeve. Like you say, I smell a tag match in the future brewing here. Christian, it wasn't the most dominating performance, but if you think about what we've seen on the show so far, he's defended against Al at the Survivor Series, he defended against Edge last week, we'll see in the next segment that he defended against Jeff on Raw, and now he's defended against Scotty Too Hotty here. So that's like 1/10 of a 1,000-day Roman Reigns title reign, but in 1/100th of the time.
Yeah.
Who's the real head of the table? You prick. Backstage, Lita chats to Jeff Hardy in the locker room about Matt and the way he's been treating Jeff. Monday night on Raw had her really worried, and then conveniently, Matt enters just in time to overhear that. Apparently Jeff wrestled with a concussion on Monday, but he feels okay now, so it's fine.
Health and safety is shot at this moment in time.
Matt creeps up from behind with an embrace and says that Jeff can suck it up and redeem himself because he scored them a number one contenders match to get a title shot at Vengeance. Oh, but it just so happens to be against Big Show and Kane, which causes Lita to declare, "Are you serious?" But Matt confidently proclaims, "We're the greatest tag team in the world!" Something's afoot here.
Does that not seem familiar to you? Only a few months ago, Edge and Christian were splitting up. And then Christian signed on for a number one contenders match against Undertaker and Kane. I think they just found the same script.
Yeah, they're pretty keen to move on with these guys that made the tag division famous and try and get a bit more singles juice out of them.
Yeah.
Colin King plug The Rock being on the cover of TV Guide, and then we see Vince being happy as Larry backstage, where he's joined by Rob Van Dam. "What's up, dude? You wanted to see me?" Vince is adamant that he goes by Mr. McMahon, not Dude, and calls RVD out on all the times he could have joined Vince, but never did. Van Damme's just like, "Well, I appreciate the offer." But Vince won't hold a grudge and wishes him luck against Bubba Ray Dudley tonight. And then wishes him luck for Vengeance, where, in a Teddy Long special, he's going to go one-on-one with The Undertaker!
Oh, I love Teddy Long specials. I miss Teddy Long.
Well, and then we're getting a tag match player coming up later on tonight, as we saw in the previous segment. So, yeah, we're going full Teddy Long tonight, Kyle.
Woohoo!
Van Damme's reaction? Okay, that's cool. Apparently he beat Taker already. That's true. He beat him in that tag match before Survivor Series that we saw a few episodes ago. So he'll just have to do it again. And Vince is absolutely fuming and tells him to leave. Now, I know cool whatever Van Damme promos have their critics, which I'd probably be chief among them, but using it in this sense here worked really, really well, as in he's not phased by Vince's mind games or his attempts to use his booking power to intimidate Van Damme at all, and he's just got faith in his own ability. This is the way they should have gone with Van Damme's character if they're, you know, gonna have him be this chill guy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it works so well off the back of Vince's, "Oh, I'm gonna make him pay and give him this sort of match," and RVD's sort of cool style just waves over that, which then annoys him even more. So it does, it works perfect.
Yeah, you have him no selling heels like this, you get a good payoff, which is just making the heels madder. Whereas if you just have him like on his own doing his shtick, it can be a bit plain, I guess.
Yeah.
Regal, strap in hand, giggity. Tells Kurt Angle backstage he'll make a right bloody example out of Austin for what he did to Vince on Monday. Angle's then bragging about how he'll become the Undisputed Champion when he spots his opponent for tonight, Edge. Kurt promises to make an example out of him and asks if Edge knows who he's talking to. Yeah, the charter member of the Kiss My Ass Club, and a man who'd be a shoo-in for president with lips like those. That sees Edge unwisely start a brawl, and Kurt tackles him into the door, which allows Regal to hit him with several lashings of the strap. That's gonna leave a mark. See, Kyle, babyfaces are stupid.
Yes, that was also my note. What the fuck is he doing? It doesn't make any sense. Why would you start a fight with two people?
Right, this is the perfect time to start a fight with two men at once, one of whom has a weapon.
Yeah.
The WWF Slam of the Week with Xbox is RVD retaining his hardcore title against Devon Dudley on Raw. And hence we're getting this next match. It's our second of the evening for the WWF Hardcore Championship. Rob Van Dam defending against the other half of the WWF Tag Team Champions, Bubba Ray Dudley, who's accompanied by Stacy Keibler. Sadly, Van Dam doesn't get to do his finger pointing in time with the announcer like we'd eventually get. Another reason why Tony Chimmel sucks. Immediately at the bell, Bubba clotheslines Van Dam down, and Michael Cole talks about Van Dam's future opponent, The Undertaker, being changed.
He's had a startling metamorphosis. What, he turned into the Hulk?
I tell you what, based off the prices for the one dead man show in Manchester, his bank account is going to metamorphosize into something bigger.
Oh.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, I actually glanced at the tickets thinking, do you know what? Let's have a look. Yeah.
What a joke.
I'll admire from a distance.
Yeah, and even then it'll be 100 quid.
Yeah.
When Van Dam climbs up top, Bubba yeets him all the way into the guardrail outside. It's then followed up with a double arm suplex, which gets tremendous air from Van Dam. Stacy passes Bubba a chair and he lays it on top of Van Dam, then heads up for his senton that always misses. And it naturally misses, as always. Van Dam then follows up with the Van Daminator, and that's enough to get the free count. Holy John Cena 2005 win, Batman. Van Dam retains after 1 minute and 45 seconds. I mean, at least Bubba got his shit in.
Yeah, a hardcore title match at 1 minute 44. Okay. Yeah.
Cool, whatever.
Dude.
How can you have one of the coolest guys on your roster with such a standout moveset only hit one move in a match? He's sold great for Bubba, but Bubba's not supposed to be the star of the show here, is he?
No.
Oh well, it's on to the important takeaway here, because out comes The Undertaker on his motorbike, clad in a hoodie with the hood up, which must be the metamorphosis that Michael Cole was talking about.
Oh, man.
There was rumblings in the previous match about JR being forced into the Vince Kiss My Ass Club. And finally, Michael Cole reveals that it was The Undertaker forcing JR to kiss Vince's behind. Taker beats up Van Dam right as a fan displays their Tommy Dreamer Rules sign. He then gets a trash can and last rides Van Dam right through it, causing King to declare, "This is vengeance right here!" Taker tells Van Dam he's got a lot to learn if he wants to survive in the WWF, and goes full on Eric Cartman, "Respect my authority!" This is Van Damme's first lesson, and he'll graduate with honours at Vengeance.
I know that I would book, well, we both would, we would book a lot of things a little different here. But I just feel, if that was a hardcore title match and anything goes, why did The Undertaker wait until Rob Van Dam had won the match? I'd just come out, beat the shit out of Van Dam, let Bubba take the title and then be like, I'm going to do it again at Vengeance. Because Taker doesn't need the hardcore belt.
It definitely wasn't advertised as a hardcore title match at Vengeance.
Yeah, I just think they could have done it that way. Oh, I'm going to fight you, you've cost me losing my title sort of thing. I don't know.
Yeah, it was clear with the Vince segment earlier, something needs to kind of light a fire under Van Dam.
Yeah.
Maybe that would have helped, but it's very inconsistent the way they treat the hardcore title in this feud, which we will see in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, you called it last week, Kyle. Undertaker in this metamorphosis, as you pointed out, Cole described it as. He's gone all a bit heel now.
Yeah.
This is a very frustrating turn for me. I know I go on all the time about Austin insisting the fans didn't want to boo him, but for me, this is the turn where you see significant numbers of fans ignore the booking and choose to continue to cheer for Taker just out of respect for his legacy.
We've talked about this on previous episodes. This is one of the first times that I noticed anyway. You've got your set of performers nowadays that, because of how good they are in the ring, it doesn't matter whether they're face or heel, they'll get cheered. You know, we've spoke about Randy Orton, we've spoke about Seth Rollins, Triple H to a degree. I think this is the first time with Taker that we actually sort of see that, you know, back in the day.
Yeah, for sure. It's a lot more common nowadays, like you say, because people either side with legacies or work rate over what the characters are doing now. But back then, it felt kind of out of place.
I know it's sort of segueing towards the modern stuff, but it just goes to show what a good deal Roman's doing. You still hear a lot of the crowd. You know, there's boos there. There's a lot of cheers. He does the acknowledge me. They love it.
Isn't it funny? The really cool guy that gets to outsmart all of the baby faces gets a significant more following than a lot of the baby faces he faces.
Yeah, I think the majority of the stuff, though, I would credit to the Usos, you know, with the whole Bloodline storyline. I think they're the ones that are sort of propping Roman, you know, not fully, to a degree. Roman's doing, you know, really good work, but I think they're sort of the unsung heroes in it all.
Well, it's because he's missed a new phase in life now, isn't he?
Yeah.
They announce that Angle versus Edge is next, and when we return from commercial, we get a recap of Undertaker's attack. Your favourite, Kyle.
This made me laugh as well, because it said something like smack of the night. There was a lot of smacks. There wasn't just one. There's numerous smacks of the night.
They're getting in the moves because we got a strap match. You're going to smack with the strap. Coach then interviews Ric Flair about Undertaker's actions. Flair's confident Undertaker will get Van Damme's respect, but tonight he wants a young buck to step up and challenge the Undertaker. Sorry, Matt and Nick wouldn't debut for another couple of years yet, mate. On to our third match of the evening, and it's Kurt Angle taking on the Intercontinental Champion Edge in a non-title match. They replay the attack on Edge backstage, and we see Edge is selling the sores as he walks out, but he's still got the presence of mind to dodge Kurt's charge in the corner and arm drag him, but then ends up getting fireman carried. Cole ties this match all the way back to the King of the Ring, see episode 44. And Edge has a tremendous block for the belly-to-belly, grapevining his legs and hitting the winning Edge faceplant. Kurt then does a similar block out of the execution that he turns into a German suplex. We get a belly-to-belly from Kurt, which he woos to celebrate, only to get power slammed, spinning heel kicked, and hit with the Edge-O-Matic for a two count. Kurt hung onto the ropes to avoid a dropkick, and he goes for the ankle lock, but Edge kicked him off into a small package for a near fall. Then out comes Regal, just as Edge hits a spear, and Regal puts Angle's foot on the rope when he goes to the cover. Edge throws accusatory glances at Regal, then backdrops Kurt over the top and onto him. But then while the ref checks on Angle, we get the podcast debut of The Power of the Punch.
The Knuckle Dusters of Doom!
Brass knucks right into the kidney, allows Angle to hit the angle slam for the three count after 5 minutes and 26 seconds. These brass knuckles were a gift from Vince McMahon that he got on the previous Raw, and he supposedly already knocked the Big Show out with them. Talk us through this one, Kyle. What did you think?
Well, I was really enjoying it until Regal came out. I thought it was a really nice start. You know, they were both building up, selling for each other, which was nice. And then once Regal came out, it sort of went a bit, I don't know, wishy-washy. I sort of get that Regal was there, so that it wasn't a clean victory and that sort of stuff. But I don't know. The good match that we were having sort of just disintegrated.
I'm with you there. The rushed and interference lead and finish kind of dragged it down a bit. It wasn't quite up to previous standards that we got of Kurt Angle TV matches on the podcast, but it was pretty action-packed. Very little flubbed or put wrong before you got to that finish. I especially loved them mirroring the suplex blocks. And the brass knuckles, again, continues Regal being on this course correction to get back to that mean streak that we were starting to see before Survivor Series. So, you know, if you're going to do an interference like this, at least it served a decent purpose in terms of stories.
Yeah, yeah.
That takes us to the halfway point of the show. So, Kyle, we're going to take a break. Not just any break. We're going to debut our new segment, Page Break.
Ooh, okay.
I saw you were rather keen to talk comics when we were talking on Twitter, so I just wanted to have a natter about what you're enjoying lately.
Oh, cool. I'm big into my X-Men and my Marvel stuff. So currently, what I've got on my reading list is the Krakoan era of X-Men, which has been going for about 3 years now. It's sort of rebooted the X-Men in like a huge way, in that they can sort of bring mutants back to life if they die on a mission, essentially cheating death, essentially making all mutants gods, if you will. I'm really enjoying how each of these issues are sort of intertwining. We're on the latter end of it now, where I feel like it's going to implode at some point. But yeah, I'm really, really enjoying that at the moment, and that's sort of what I've got my teeth in.
Very good. Is it still Jonathan Hickman on that run? Or I saw he was possibly leaving.
Jonathan Hickman's left the X-Men now, but he's left it in very capable hands of Jerry Duggan, who is absolutely exceptional. Not being biased that he has written a lot of Cable, as that's my favourite mutant. He's now doing a new project with Marvel regarding gods. Sort of gods that you haven't seen in the past, building sort of a backstory around all of this. G-O-D-S. And it's like cosmic entities. So I'm quite interested to see what this is all about. Apparently he's going to tap into quite a lot of the Marvel Universe and bring them under this new banner that he's writing. But Hickman's just on another level. The amount of writing and planning that that man does to then have the level of detail is just insane.
Nice. I liked Duggan's run on Deadpool as well, so I've no doubt that he's doing a good job there too.
Yeah, the Deadpool run was fantastic. I know from when you were tweeting, you like to read quite a lot of the Power Rangers stuff.
I do, yeah. I'm a couple of issues behind. What I like to do is get them physically if I can get a variant cover, and then if I can't, I just wait for them to come down a little bit on Kindle.
Yeah.
So yeah, Melissa Flores is doing a pretty brilliant job. They do a few other like tokusatsu style books for, I think it's Image, like in the kind of Radiant Black universe that another former MMPR writer, Kyle Higgins, is involved with.
Yeah, yeah.
So very well drilled in those kind of stories. And as a kid that really desperately wanted to see the Tommy clone stick around so we could get both green and white Rangers around, I'm very happy we got a little bite of that with Matt taking up the mantle. And I just finished off the second MMPR and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles crossover, which was very entertaining as well. Lots of really cool ideas.
Yeah, I've seen that MMPR do a lot of crossovers with a lot of different titles here and there.
The ones with the turtles are definitely the best ones they also did one with Justice League, and last year there was a Godzilla crossover too, which got a bit of mixed reviews, but I was still quite a big fan. I appreciated the kinds of monsters that they got involved, like Rhino Blaster and those kinds of people that were a good fit for the Godzilla kind of universe monsters.
Yeah. Just going back to what you were saying earlier about you like to get physical, I'm the same. Depending on what issues are coming out, I've got Marvel Unlimited, you know, the digital library.
Mm.
They're 2 months behind, so you're obviously not reading up-to-date stuff. You're constantly 2 months behind, but I keep up to date with what's going on now. So if I know there's an issue coming out soon that I want to, you know, look for a variant, or I'd like the actual issue, then I'll go out to like Forbidden Planet or your smaller comic book stores and pick those up. Especially if it's something to do with Cable, or, you know, there's a variant that's got Cable on the front and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And then the other thing that I started quite recently, it's a series from last year on Image called Do a Powerbomb.
Oh, okay.
Very wrestling-based. It's from creator Daniel Warren Johnson.
Yeah.
He kind of fell in love with New Japan while he was raising his daughter and had to watch some things to kind of stave off boredom while he tried to get them to sleep. And so he's crafted this weird sort of afterlife tale based around a mother-daughter combo where the mother passes away in the ring and the daughter is trying to follow in her footsteps, but nobody will kind of touch her. And then this necromancer gets involved, and it's really, really cool. The artwork's great. And yeah, I would give it a recommend.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. I do like quite a lot of Image stuff. Like, one of my all-time favourite comic book writers, Rick Remender, he does a lot of stuff for Image. The two biggest ones for me were Black Science and Deadly Class that he did. I've got all of the issues of those, and they're just incredible.
Well, if you want to ever talk comics with us, give us a shout-out on Twitter. We're at TNW Podcast, or you can find Kyle on his Twitter at Kazzy23.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've got any issues that you're reading and you want to talk about, or any recommendations that you want me and Dunk to check out, send us a message, definitely.
We see Trish walking backstage, heading out for her match, and then get the Lugs Boot of the Week, which was Trish beating Stacy once again on Raw. This time it was in a bra and panties match that somehow ended in a pinfall. I don't remember those being the rules usually.
Hmm.
At the very least, they stole the cool victory roll finish from Invasion. So our fourth scheduled match is for the WWF Women's Championship. Trish Stratus defending against Jacqueline. Cole puts over Trish for defending her title in highly unorthodox matches. But wait a minute. Before Jackie can even come out to the ring, here is Mr. McMahon. And King suspects he's here to induct Trish into the club.
For fuck's sake.
Yeah, this is definitely where the show takes a turn. He winks at Trish, talks about how they go back a ways, and makes her highly uncomfortable about their past relationship while perving all over her. Oh, joy. He didn't forget about WrestleMania, so tonight, yeah, Trish is joining the club.
It was so, so uncomfortable, this whole segment. Very uncomfortable.
It's kind of fucked up that Becky and Trish are in a pretty interesting looking heated feud right now, but like, Becky will sometimes bring up some of the stuff that Trish had to do in these feuds as like fuel, and it's a bit too shooty if you ask me. In kayfabe, this was all against Trish's will, and even in reality it's a little bit like, well, if I don't go through with this, what state is my career going to be in, you know?
Yeah, it was very, like, hands tied, figuratively and actually.
Yeah. Vince reiterates that he's not asking her to do anything she hasn't done before, albeit not in public, and then mentions how proud she must be to be the women's champion before demanding she gets on her knees. The implication being that he'll strip her of the title if she doesn't go through with this. Thankfully, just as he gets unbuckled, here comes The Rock. Rock demands Vince leaves his pants down. Rock knows Vince would want everyone in this arena to kiss his ass, so why not ask The Rock instead? He then tells Vince to walk into the middle of the ring, and Vince does the most aggressive half-dressed shuffle you can imagine. He's like a toddler that you told off for not dressing properly. Like, come here, get these pants on. Rock thinks Vince should be humiliated, so he'll take an object, turn it sideways, and stick it straight up Vince's ass. Maybe one of Kansas's ears of corn. On behalf of the club's past victims, the millions, and the future undisputed champion, Rock delivers a rock bottom and a people's elbow. Out comes Chris Jericho, who tries to attack with a chair, but got cut off, only for a Vince low blow to allow Jericho to hit Rock in the head with the chair. Then Jericho does the people's elbow onto the chair. Still got something in the water from last week there.
Yeah.
And he declares that he is the biggest star Rock will ever see. I don't know if this maybe got edited out of the airing on Sky, because I have little to no memory of this segment.
I sort of remember the Trish bit. I remember the Rock coming out. And then, yeah, sort of the Jericho bit's a bit hazy.
I feel like it'd be rare for them to do this, but it's still plausible that it could have happened. Like, obviously, it's pre-recorded. It will air earlier in the evening than Raw would. Who knows? But maybe I just blanked it from my mind because it's just horrific.
Yeah.
Do we really need to revisit Vince humiliating Trish again?
No, not at all.
The segment where she was made to bark like a dog is widely regarded as one of the most tasteless segments in history.
Yeah.
Oh, and typical women's wrestling bullshit here. The one time Trish is going to be booked in a match that isn't highly unorthodox, it doesn't go ahead. Oh well, let's move on to our actual fourth match of the evening, which is the number one contenders match for the tag team titles. The Hardy Boys, accompanied by Lita, taking on Big Show and Kane. Cole, apparently, tried to talk with Kane about The Undertaker's actions and how he feels about that, but Kane refused to talk about it, which leads King to quip, "Maybe he just didn't want to talk to you, Michael."
Could be true.
It could be, but again, this is another hanging thread that really frustrated me about this Undertaker turn. Like, why is Kane not involved with this at all? I would have loved a heel Undertaker versus babyface Kane proper feud, and we never really got it.
Yeah.
At the get-go, Kane dominates Matt, only for Matt to escape a powerbomb and sunset flip Kane, although it took Jeff coming in with a crossbody to properly get him down. The Twist of Fate gets countered into a front power slam, which allows the Big Show to tag in, but when Matt lands on his feet from a gorilla press, Jeff also tags in, only to get slammed. Jeff ducks a short arm clothesline to hit the Whisper in the Wind. Holy crap! Don't imagine that being the kind of thing to bring Big Show off his feet.
He went down like a heap of shit.
Right.
It was like his legs just stopped working for a second.
Ah, oh, the wind! That sees tags on both sides, with Matt getting a moonsault for two. Jeff then got a blind tag back in when the Twist of Fate gets countered again, and he saves Matt from a choke slam. And a double baseball slide sends Big Show off the apron. But then the double suplex is naturally blocked and Show suplexes both Hardys before... What the hell did I write here? Oh, before dumping himself over the top while trying to clothesline them out. The ref tends to Show on the outside. Lita takes advantage by attempting the Lita Kanrana, but it's blocked. So Kane sets her up on the top rope, only for Jeff's dropkick to the back, leading to Kane unintentionally colliding with Lita and sending her over the top rope to the outside. The Hardys then go for the poetry in motion, but it's big booted out of midair, and that's enough to get the freak out. What the fuck?
That's such a bad finish.
Big Show and Kane are on their way to Vengeance after 4 minutes and 45 seconds in a match with a watchable big versus small dynamic before we got that wet fart of a finish.
Wet fart of a finish. I mean, that's an official review term now. We're keeping that.
It's another moment where Jeff had well-intentioned recklessness bite him back on the bum, which I'm sure Matt will be super chilled about. Anything else about this match that stuck out for you, Kyle?
I mean, just to start off with, Jeff Hardy's hair was a different colour to the segment from earlier on in the show, so something happened there.
Whoa, I missed this.
Yeah. At the beginning of the show, it was like all different colours, and then in the match, it was like a smurfy blue colour.
Oh my god, that is terrible.
It's like, okay. Have you just sprayed it as like Halloween spray or, you know? Odd. Very odd. Kane and Big Show have zero chemistry. I'm going to just put that out there. Just two big brutes.
Right.
What else is there to say? I think it was a little better than a shit show.
It's almost as if splitting up your best tag teams kind of knackers the tag team division a bit.
Yeah.
Oh, apparently, you'll be able to watch Vengeance in WWF New York. That then cues the really cool 4 superstars, 3 matches, 2 titles, 1 undisputed champion rundown of the main event matches. Oh, right on cue, the Hardys are arguing again. Matt blames Jeff for not getting the title shot and for Lita getting hurt, calling it another stupid decision. Out of frustration, Jeff yells, "You want a match at Vengeance so bad? You got one!"
For something that they've been building for weeks and weeks and weeks, you would think that it would get more than 2 seconds from Michael Cole. Oh, they're having a match at Vengeance. Right, on to the next thing. Oh, right, okay, cool. Weeks and weeks of build for Michael Cole to just confirm that they're going to have a match.
It's the one thing that's got a bit of gravitas outside of the undisputed title scene, really.
Mm.
Kane and Big Show just won a match, and that's how they're getting their match at Vengeance. Van Damme has just been thrown into a match by decree of Vince McMahon. So, you know, Vengeance is taking shape, but this is the only one that feels like a natural feud so far outside of the main event. Okay, here we go, Kyle. Next up is the recap of Monday Night Raw, where Vince tried to get Austin to join the club. Pucker up and kiss my ass! All Vince got instead was a low blow and a whipping with his own belt, until all of Vince's boys run Austin away. JR was laughing his ass off at all of this, and Kurt Angle snitched on him. "You think this is funny, hillbilly boy?" Kurt hauled JR out of his chair, and Vince decides that JR should join the club instead. That cues the arrival of The Undertaker, who bemoans having to kiss Vince's ass for the past 11 years, and then asks JR if he was going to kiss Vince's ass. "Hell no, I was going to kiss his ass." "Is that because you're better than me?" He nails a shocked JR with a right hand and forces Jim's face into Vince's ass. Yikes.
Not good watching at all.
This is one of the main reasons why I found the fans continuing to side with The Undertaker so frustrating. JR is like unimpeachable as far as a character in the WWF. If you do stuff to JR, you are a sick fucking fiend and you're going straight to hell, pal.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're okay tonight because it's a pre-recorded show and they can do whatever they want with the crowd, but you just watch. We'll get a few shows in and Undertaker will be a lot more popular than he should be. Backstage, Taz meets up with Ric Flair and asks if anyone stepped up to the challenge yet. When Flair says no, Taz informs him, "I'm your guy!" And they both exchange woos in celebration.
See, that sort of took me out of it a little bit. Taz is supposed to be this big, mean Brooklyn, New York sort of guy. And he's fucking wooing with Ric Flair.
Let's face it, Taz is all over the place at the minute. He's just been hired back because he twatted Heyman. He lost to Regal. He twatted Funaki for laughing at him about losing to Regal. He got squashed by the Big Show, and now he's all sticking up for justice and going after The Undertaker because, you know, that's what one of his bosses wants.
Nah.
Schizophrenia Jones here. But I digress. As you mentioned, Kyle, the WWF Smack of the Night with Noriko, some shaver or something?
It looks like it's putting cream on the cheek. It looks really odd.
Oh, what, maybe it's like Gillette or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, the smack of the night is Undertaker's attack on Rob Van Dam earlier, which cues our fifth match of the evening. The Undertaker is meeting the open challenge of Taz! This time, Undertaker is walking out without his bike, and he goes nose-to-nose with Taz to show the size disparity. Then the brawl is on with Undertaker big-booting Taz, only to miss an elbow drop. Taker crouches Taz on the top rope to escape a front face lock, finally removes his biker vest, and declares, "Now we're going to school, boy!" He tied Taz in the Tree of Woe, then backed out of doing old school when the fans started to cheer for him. He finally decides to go for it, but George acts with the people at ringside long enough for Taz to arm drag him off the top, which causes Cole to exclaim, "I've never seen anyone do that to The Undertaker before." Yeah, sure you haven't, Michael. The Taz mission is locked in, and he even keeps the hold on as The Undertaker goes through the ropes to the outside. He finally breaks it by driving Taz into the barricade, then bear hugs him into the post and choke slams him back inside to get the free count. In a post-match attack, The Undertaker rams the steel steps into a still knocked out Taz to lord over his victory, which took 4 minutes and 40 seconds. What do you make to this?
I mean, he sort of sold a little bit more for Taz. That sort of surprised me. But in the end, it was literally just a squash match. Nice little, I'm going to do my rope walk. No, I'm not. Psych! But yeah, very disappointing, really, from an Undertaker point of view.
A nothing brawl for the most part. I don't think it did much for either guy. The one aspect that I liked is Taz being able to keep the Taz mission on for so long, even when they were flooding out of the ring. Regal is walking in the back with his strap. That means it's main event time. It's a non-title leather strap match. William Regal facing off against the WWF champion, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Tony Chimmel announces that the only way to win is to touch all four corners consecutively. That's putting it much more succinctly than when he had to announce the rules for JBL versus Eddie back at the Great American Bash. Hi, last match standing. Regal won't let Austin in the ring, and he keeps going to whip him. So Austin throws his title at him. When Regal finally lets Austin in, he keeps yanking the strap away before Steve can get linked up. So Austin just starts the brawl and stomps a mud hole and walks it dry. He sends Regal over the top and into the crowd. Stone Cold tries some whips amongst the crowd. That's really bloody risky.
Yeah.
Imagine the lawsuit there.
Oof.
He goads the ref into doing a toast with him and then hits Regal with a can of beer. He uses a strap to pull Regal into the post and then starts whipping him into knife edge chops with the strap. Regal then blocks a pile driver on the announce table into a backdrop on the table, and Austin's leg hits a monitor, which looked really painful. That's finally Hebner's cue to strap Austin up, and Regal gets some lashes in. Austin escapes a suplex, but then Regal is able to block the stunner, elbow him down, and start tapping the buckles. He got two, but then got crotched by Austin with the strap. Austin then hogties Regal and starts touching corners, but Regal gets to the ropes and gets the knee trembler, a clothesline with the strap, and then the Regal cutter using the strap. Regal made it to three corners, only to get pulled into a spine buster, which sees Austin start touching the corners. He then cuts Regal off once with a low blow, then once more with a Stone Cold Stunner, and that allows him to touch the fourth corner to get the win after 7 minutes and 33 seconds. Then immediately after the bell, Kurt Angle comes out to attack Austin. Everyone was chanting for The Rock to come back out, but instead, it's Edge who evens the score with a spear on Regal. Austin's then able to block a German suplex to whip Angle with the belt and shit-can him out to close the show. What did you make to the main event?
I'm not a fan of strap matches, just to throw that out there. It's sort of counterintuitive to what, as a wrestling fan, we're trained to pop for. I don't know, it throws me every time there's a strap match. I really enjoyed what they did with it. I don't like the stipulation of it. Edge coming out at the end decides, oh, well, I didn't really do well with the 2-on-1, so I'll help Austin out. Yeah, I think it was the best match of the night. I think, for me, the way that Regal starts off, he's sort of taunting Austin, get the strap, oh, no, get the strap. And then Austin absolutely beats the living shit out of him. You could have done that then without the strap. So the strap is then not needed. And it feels like it's a pointless stipulation in the first place. And you could have easily had a decent match between Regal and Austin without this stupid strap match in there. But I enjoyed it for what it was. Still not a strong match, but the strongest of the night.
It's easily the match of the night. I agree with you there. Relatively one-sided, particularly the opening half, but it still had enough intensity and interesting counter spots to keep your attention. It's another good example of how this Austin face turn is going a lot better than I expected.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll join in with you here and say strap matches aren't necessarily my favourite. When you talk about it going against what the crowd would usually root for, do you mean like in the sense of when the match should finish, or?
Yeah, because, I don't know, you're still longing for something.
I do think it's kind of counterintuitive that you've got this stipulation where it's supposed to be for like a more aggressive feud, you're tied together because you're going to be at close quarters with each other, and then how do you win? Oh, you touch the corners.
Yeah.
That seems way tamer than a regular match and than the body of the match. It's like when you have a steel cage match and it only can end with escape.
Yeah.
It's something, again, supposed to keep people at close quarters and work their aggression out, and then the way you win, it just doesn't really match up.
Yeah, very strange.
I see this one get brought up as like a little bit of a hidden gem, and maybe an indicator that Regal could have worked further up the card. And I see little flashes of that, but I don't know. I don't necessarily consider this some lost classic.
No, no, not at all.
But that'll wrap up the show. Kyle, sum up your thoughts on this episode for us. Who was your standout performer in this? We're already in agreement that the main event was the best match.
Yeah, I think standout performer, I'm going to go with Austin. I just think to kick off the show, I thought he was fantastic. Had the audience begging for more. Really worked well with Angle when Angle came out. And he sort of made the most of the main event and sort of did what he could with a shit show of a stipulation. Overall, like knowing what's to come, watching this, I didn't feel like I was ready for Vengeance. It didn't make me think, oh shit, right, Vengeance is coming up now, I'm ready to go. I was still left a bit like, oh, you've got a week left to build this up for me.
I see what you mean. I think this took a notable dip from last week. The in-ring action for sure took a dip, got far less time. It's a lot more promo heavy. And a lot of the people that got the promo work were the people in the main event scene. That's already kind of set in stone for Vengeance. Does that really need that much adding to it?
Yeah.
We got a couple more matches set up, but still feels a bit, I don't know, itty bitty.
Yep.
I think it took a real dive when we got to the big Vince segment halfway through the show. You know, the Angle match was solid. I'm not really into the Undertaker turn. I'm okay with the test stuff going on. That's all still good. My MVP, like you, Kyle, it's got to be Stone Cold Steve Austin. Kind of bookends the show with really nice, funny promo to kick things off, set the tone, and the best match of the night at the end.
Yeah.
I'm way more sold on this turn than I thought I would be, looking back. So yeah, a bit of a dip from last week.
Yeah, you sort of could see as well, it was lazy booking as well. You can always tell when they don't know what to do if they book a big guy to squash a little guy. There was a few in this episode.
I can totally see that. A whole bunch of one-sided stuff. But who knows, maybe things will improve next time around. Because on our next episode, we are going to be looking at Vengeance.
I really, really enjoyed this pay-per-view at the time.
Well, I have here with me the very tape that I used to record Vengeance from Channel 4. And hopefully, if I get the one VCR that we have left up and running, I'm going to be able to watch it all back authentically as it would have been on Channel 4.
Wow, that'd be cool.
Which includes ad breaks and everything. And because I left the tape running that night, it also includes the international edition of Sunday Night Heat just before the show.
Oh, perfect.
So hopefully you're going to get lots of nice little bonusy extras and stuff. If not, I'm unfortunately going to have to put my blooming tenor back down and give Vince McMahon some more money so I can watch it on the bloody network. But
do you know, one thing, just as you mentioned the network, I don't know what's going on at the moment, but they need to bring out some more original stuff. They were this huge push of, oh, you're going to get original this, you're going to get original that. New documentaries, new shows, new this, new that. We're in fucking June. We had nothing. They are WWE 24. Yes, they're great, but I'm not having that is what you're saying as new content.
I don't particularly miss having it around, to be honest.
Rant over. No, I do enjoy watching the live shows, I will be honest.
the next time that I have to subscribe and binge watch a few of the shows that we need for the podcast, one of the modern things that's going to be at the top of my list is the Backlash show this year from Puerto Rico.
Yeah, very, very good.
That looked fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, outstanding.
Either way, we'll see you next time for Vengeance. And in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at TNW Podcast, follow us on Instagram at TNW_podcast, or give us a like on Facebook to keep up to date with when our next episode is coming out, or just have a chat with us.
Yeah, it's always nice having a chat online with everyone who's listening.
Give us a follow on SoundCloud, give us a subscribe and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or you can listen to us on Stitcher Radio. You can catch up with all of our episodes so far with a handy playlist I made on our SoundCloud page, as well as a playlist of my guest appearances on the Roars Nitro podcast. Lee is being a real trooper with his one-man shows at the minute, even venturing into Hogan Knows Best territory. Oh my god, what a shit show that was. I still remember when we only had one Freeview box in the house and it was downstairs, and I made my dad put, what was it called now? TMT21?
Oh, I can't remember.
It's that MTV Freeview channel that wasn't called MTV, and they had Hogan Knows Best on it, and like, Dad, I'm watching this. And I fucking regretted it.
It's that point, I've done this before. You get a point where you force someone to put it on and you sit there and internally you think this is fucking shit, but you can't say anything and you've just got to sort of smile and be like, thanks, yay!
Yeah, give our boy Lee a follow at Roy's Nitro Pod. Anyway, in the meantime, it's a goodbye from Kyle.
Thank you very much for listening. I'll see you on the next episode.
That's a goodbye from me. I'll catch you down the road.